Hello, welcome back to Offspring Magazine's podcast. It's Sarah, and I will be hosting today's podcast. Today, I will talk to Professor Hathela Buonsanti. She is a tenured associate professor at the Institute of Chemical Sciences and Engineering of the Ecole Polytechnique Fédérale de Lausanne. Today, we will talk about her career as a successful female scientist. Hope you will enjoy this conversation. Today, our guest is Professor Hathela Buonsanti from Switzerland. We will talk about her career as a successful female scientist. Thank you very much for joining us today.
Thank you for having me.
Would you like to introduce yourself?
Yes, so I'm Hathela Buonsanti. I'm originally from the south of Italy, and I studied in the south of Italy for my undergraduate studies and for my PhD. Then I moved to the United States, so to Berkeley, where I was for my postdoc. And then I started a career as a tenure-track staff scientist at the Lawrence Berkeley National Lab. And in 2015, at the end, I moved at EPFL, at the Institute of Chemical Sciences and Engineering, as a tenure-track assistant professor. And since last year, I'm a tenured associate professor there. So this is a bit of a summary about my academic career so far.
Congratulations to your 10 years associate professor position. I would like to ask, since we have so many female colleagues, they're struggling now to stay in the academia in the future or go into the industry. How and why did you decide to stay in the academia?
To be honest, I didn't have to think about it. I mean, I had no doubts. I never thought about an alternative career. So I didn't, it was just, I never thought about leaving it.
You really just into the science.
And I was really into the science and not thinking about what do I do after or... And to be honest, I do think that also academic career offers you much more freedom in terms also of organizing your personal life compared to industry. Mm-hmm. Because I love this concept of not life-work balance, but life-work integration. So you can take, in the end, you can organize your day as you wish, not as someone else tells you to organize your day. So to be honest, I think it remains a great place to be in for general well-being, or at least this is for me.
Actually, it's my first time to hear this concept, because we're living in Germany, people like to say work-life balance.
Well, I don't like it. I don't like the work-life balance. I like very much, there was an article from Berkeley, well, the one that I read, that was about work-life integration. And I like it more, because if work is a... Why it has to be something bad to do. I like just to organize my life so that I can do things that I love, which include work. It includes also sport and physical activity, which I do need to be balanced. Mm-hmm. But academia allows me to really do both because I can manage well life. Okay, in my case, I don't have a family. Mm-hmm. But also if you think about having kids, you can also balance that because, okay, maybe you spend time with them where they are awake, and then, okay, when they go to sleep, maybe you can work. I mean, you have freedom to organize your day as you wish. So this is I like it.
I will ask you for the link of this article and we can attach this profile. Actually, I'm in a period, especially recently, because I'm in my third year PhD. Mm. Sometimes I really want to quit. It's like, I feel it's so difficult, but sometimes
what
I love it so much.
But this is the beauty of it also. It's never boring. You have high and low. High and low. Sometimes like, what am I doing with my life? But then sometimes you love it so much, so it's never flat. And I feel that the high compensate the low, at least for me. So
when you were doing your PhD, did you have this kind of phase like you feel like it's so many data, you don't know how to organize them anymore? Like there are so many new things, like you want to make them, like everything connect to each other, and you want your results make sense, but everything is new. Like you don't have so many literature to refer. How you deal with this kind of situation, like at least went through past.
Well, I think sometimes also your supervisor can help you with that.
Yeah, that's true.
So I think it's also making sure that you always ask for advices, and there are people that I'm sure are happy to help you and to guide you towards one direction, or they can ask you the right questions that can clarify, or at least this is what I do my best to be that person for the students I work with.
That sounds nice.
I don't know if I succeed, but I do my best to do it.
If you were like from the beginning, you were into the science, then how did you decide your research direction like for the future? Like now you're focused on topics of synthesis development of nanocrystals.
I mean, nanocrystals, I always work with them since my PhD.
Yes.
But then I expanded more towards different applications.
Mm-hmm.
And over the years, and then eventually, when I joined as a staff scientist at the Joint Center for Artificial Photosynthesis in US, I started learning more about catalysis, and I thought what I do could really contribute to advance that field. And I felt it's a highly interdisciplinary environment, and I was fascinated by entering in a new field, and I think the chemistry and the materials chemistry can really help advancing heterogeneous catalysis in general. So it happened also. It's not that I had to think hard about it, but was by exposing myself also to different... This is what Lawrence Berkeley National Lab helped me doing, was really to expose myself to many different topics so that I could eventually kind of feel where I wanted to contribute to, while keeping my materials chemistry, materials inorganic chemistry background, and keep still developing it and pushing it further, motivated by catalysis.
So you choose your direction by, according to the potential of the topic or according to your interest?
Both. I think it matched. I don't know. I was not rational in the choice. I just felt was a good combination of my interest and potential implication of the topic.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, because I read your recent paper. It's kind of about carbon dioxide reduction reaction.
Yeah.
And it's for the, like, the future energy. I don't know. Sometimes I don't have so positive, like, optimistic perspectives about this topic, because we have so far to go. Like, how can we...
Well, but that's why you have to enjoy along the way what you are doing. So it has to be not only the final goal that has to sound inspiring to you, but also the work in between. So the fact of... understanding how to make these materials that might be helpful for catalysis, but maybe for something else. Or also, sure, in this moment is electrochemical CO2 reduction, because I felt was a topic that was less explored and needed some more maybe materials chemist, and I don't know. In the moment, I felt it was a good direction, but I don't know if this will continue, you know, for the rest of my career. So, but catalysis is also fascinating, because then you have to understand how your material change. You have to utilize many different techniques to understand what is happening on the surface of your catalyst, what is happening inside your catalyst. And it's like, it's a fascinating combination of so many different aspects that you never get bored. I mean, there is always some new things to look at, new techniques to learn. new chemistry to learn. I don't know. I feel like it's it's never so it's not only the ultimate goal, but it's the process of that you have fun working on on it. So
if let you choose like few factors about your career, like make you come to today, like what kind of factor which are important to you? For example, some people will say the intelligence, some people will say hard work, and
well, hard work is needed. I think without hard work, you can be super smart, but I think keep going and being hard worker and push through difficult times. So you need resilience also to keep going, and you need to be open to new possibilities. So not taking a decision and saying, well, I will do this. No, maybe something else will show up while you work. So being open-minded, and so I will say yes, resilient, hard worker, and open-minded.
I really love this answer. this is my typical question in my interview, because my interview topic is about gender equality. So I'd like to ask, have you experienced any difficulties in your career because you're a female scientist?
Yeah, to be honest, no. Because, or maybe because I love so much what I do that I don't even see things. So I don't know, but I never felt that being a female scientist was a problem for me. Maybe there was maybe an episode where I felt extremely uncomfortable. Actually, there is only one episode that was with an old professor, which came to visit, and it was very, very inappropriate. And I think that would not have happened if I was, I mean, for sure, it would not have happened if I was a male. Mm-hmm. So this is only one episode. But okay, I hope these people will eventually disappear. And I can only tell that all my young colleagues are great people to work with. So I hope that the old, the classical old white male professors, eventually they will disappear from academia, and that the younger colleague, actually, they are great. So there was one episode, actually, but I prefer to remove it from my memories. Yeah, so that's it. Yeah, it's true.
When you are interview your students, like if any time the gender appears in your mind, like, oh, there's a female PhD student, maybe this topic doesn't suit to her, this kind of idea, or
no, never. For me, they are equal. I don't know, they can tell me. I mean, I let them choose often.
Yes.
Or sometimes they experience, actually it's quite interesting, because when they start, I mean, the projects are always quite broad. I mean, they could go more into the surface chemistry, or they can go more into the synthesis of particles, or they can do more in the catalysis. And it's quite interesting how eventually each student does evolve into going more in one direction over another. And so what I've learned, that sure, you assign them a project, but then they go into the direction that suits them better. So it's never maybe assign a too narrow topic, but give them a bit of a freedom to eventually shape the project as they wish. So I would say that this is more important.
Yeah. Then you have more space to choose.
I have more space.
Yes.
Yes, you are right. Now, space. Yes. So that is super nice.
Yeah.
Actually, I have a bit of space, of some freedom. And I'm also thankful for, I think also the funding agency, they allow you to do that within certain restriction. But I think it's important, because you should harvest creativity, not only your own creativity, but the creativity of the students. So sometimes letting them go in one way rather than another can lead to results that you didn't expect before. So I think having some flexibility is important. And I'm lucky to have it.
Do you have any like God rules or principles for your team they have to follow, like how you manage your lab? Like,
I would dream. So we really like, this is what we have these, I think, the most important thing for me is communication.
Mm-hmm.
I'm really open. And this is what I tell everyone joining my team, mm-hmm. that I'm really open. I'm going to say clearly mm-hmm. if I like things, clearly if I don't like things, and I expect them to do the same with me. Mm-hmm. Because only like really an open communication then helps to develop the trust that is needed for me and the student or the researcher to work together. Mm-hmm. And then we can really have conversations because we know we trust each other, and what we are doing is simply to advance science mm-hmm. the best way possible. So I will say that communication is the most important aspect of leading a team for me. I consider all of us quite equal
mm-hmm.
as long as we need to communicate. So this is the most important thing for me.
You said you're very open. How do you define open? Like, we have so many professors, they're very open at the end, actually they're not. Like, I was thinking, maybe you have your own.
How do you define open then? What is open? What is for you this open while not being open?
I think there are two kinds of open, like openness. One kind is you need to stay in this circle, like this is there is a direction. Then you can go into this direction.
Open openly. For me is like, I will tell you what I think
mm-hmm.
clearly. So if mm-hmm. I do like something, but not in terms of science, maybe the way in which also you are you are conducting a project
mm-hmm.
Or also the way in which you are managing your time mm-hmm. or the way in which you are approaching the direction of your project. I mean, not open, I guess you refer to open in terms of project direction.
Yeah.
I mean, there are some constraints.
Yes.
So I was referring more to the communication being open.
Mm-hmm.
And so if there are issues, these issues should be communicated mm-hmm. as soon as possible. In mm-hmm. more interpersonal issues
mm-hmm.
should be communicated as soon as possible. If there are mm-hmm. things that make uncomfortable or mm-hmm. things that, for example, you have issues because a project is not working
mm-hmm.
or this is what not open in the sense of a project. This is what you were referring to.
Yeah,
okay, I think sometimes there are some constraints.
Yeah, then mm-hmm. I have an interesting question. If the two team members in your team, like they have conflicts, do you interfere?
It never happened so far. Would I interfere? I don't think so. Because I don't know really. I'm not sure I could do it. Maybe, I don't know. Because who am I to interfere if I don't know exactly what is the situation?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I mean, luckily, it didn't happen. But probably I will let you solve on your own. Your conflict. I will recommend you to talk to each other and try to explain your own reason to the other. Because my experience is that conflict arises when people make an assumption regarding the reason behind a certain behavior.
Uh-huh.
So if people clarify
uh-huh.
why they behave a certain way, often the conflict did not even have a reason for existing. So I will simply suggest the two to really be open with each other and
mm-hmm.
discuss the reason and explain the reason. So this will be my job, will not be to to do more.
To build a team based on trust. Like when.
But this is between me and the people, the team member.
Yeah.
I don't know, among team members... I mean, I'm not a psychologist. I don't have the right background to do that. So this is also something that should be clear that professors, we do our best to manage a team. But, there are some skills that go a bit beyond and I don't know. I will let the people, I will give some recommendation, but let the people deal with it.
Do you have any like problematic student in your career so far, PhD student? Like
but problematic with me or with the group or I don't know. I mean, there have been cases where maybe our communication was not the best. But I don't know, maybe it was me the problem, it was not the student the problem. So how do you define a student problematic? Sometimes it's a matter of matching personality.
Yes.
It's not necessarily that one or the other is a problem. So I don't know.
It sounds like you're really studying psychology now.
No, I don't know. You know, it's hard to say who is the problem. So
yeah,
I don't know.
That's true. I have so many questions immediately.
Well, let's see, and then maybe we don't have to have everything
yes.
in this. We will pick.
Yeah. Recently, the topic about imposter syndrome, like during the PhD student postdoc, are very popular. People talk about it a lot. Have you ever experienced imposter
syndrome? I mean, you will always feel not qualified. This is going to last. All your life, but I think it's the great part because if you feel you always have something to learn, that's amazing. I mean, you will be constantly learning all your life and constantly trying to improve. What's wrong with that? I think this is, I know that this imposter syndrome goes a bit beyond what I'm saying, but what you're saying regarding not qualified enough. Of course, I mean, science is so complex, so we have to be, you know, there was Seneca, that is like, il sapere di non sapere, is a philosopher. And so it's like knowing of not knowing is what keeps you going. So the more you know, and the more you know that you should know more.
Yeah.
So I feel this is the beauty of it. And everyone, I think in science, should have that type of feeling. Because there is always things to learn. So this is how I take it.
Science should have this kind of feeling.
It is science.
Yeah.
So we'll never finish.
Interesting. I really have. Have you ever experienced your achievements were overlooked? Like maybe like
by myself. I overlook my achievement. So I never think, I did this thing. I always look at what else I could do. So I am the one overlooking my achievements. But also that I find it as positive. But maybe explain me better with what you mean with your achievement being overlooked.
Okay. Basically, since we have so many Nobel Prize and there are so many male scientists and there are female scientists, they probably had done similar achievements.
But to be honest, but this is up to me because I don't care about external recognition.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the hardest judge,
mm-hmm.
sometimes I feel is myself. So I compete with myself in the end, which is a tougher place to be.
I think so. How do you comment? If you give yourself a comment or, self-evaluation, how do you evaluate
I'm learning yourself? To be a bit better, to be a bit kinder with myself. I've been learning it more in the recent years to tell myself, you didn't do too bad so far, but you can do better. So this is the internal conversation. But this keeps me going. But I think it's important at some point also for students like to stop
mm-hmm.
and maybe think, what did you achieve so far?
Yeah.
Okay, that's super nice. Can you do better? Sure you can. And how do you do better? So I think it is important to stop some time and to reflect about how many things you did up to that point. But not in a way that makes you feel arrived to the point of to the end point,
mm-hmm.
but something that you can still reach the next. But the next, I don't know what it is. It's just keep improving and doing better. And there are so many different aspects on which you can do better. You can become a better mentor. You can become a better advisor. You can become a better scientist. You can present your research better. You can improve in writing proposal. You can make more impactful science that you did before. Mm-hmm. So, yeah. This is a thing. Yeah. To summarize, it's important to stop from time to time and acknowledge your achievement, mm-hmm. and then eventually keep realizing how many things you could do better and keep going.
As a supervisor, if a PhD student just starts their PhD study, what kind of suggestion you would give to them to have a proper PhD life? Because every student, when they start PhD, I'm not sure. I think they're very confused.
Well, the first thing is that you need to be resilient, mm-hmm. not to be frustrated. You have to explore different pathway, ask advices to your supervisor, including your supervisor. Well, I don't know. These are the main things, I guess. Yeah, to not to be frustrated because science is hard. Asking for help to your colleagues and to your supervisor. And be resilient and still find something that you like outside science, mm-hmm. which can help you dealing with the frustration that you will find, whether this is sport, mm-hmm. whether this is music, whether this, I think it's important to have that one thing mm-hmm. that you can do in order sometimes to get detached from your project and get some fresh idea and then maybe to go back to it.
What are your hobbies?
I like sport a lot. So I do a lot of exercise and mm-hmm. I need to do sport every day. So I find physical activity very rewarding and is complementary to my, my work. There is my brain that is deeply involved, of course, in what we do. And then I need also to do physical activity. So I like running a lot. I've been running marathons and trail running. Now it's more fitness based, so more strength training. But I also like to discover and learn more about about training our body. And I think it's important. We say also in Latin, "Mens sana in corpore sano," which means a healthy mind in an healthy body. So I work also to keep myself healthy and active.
Actually,
in my calendar, the sport is there. So I put it in the calendar, because when people say you don't have time, you can make time. And this is where where I discuss about life-work integration. Mm-hmm. That's part of life-work integration, that sport is on my calendar. As meetings are on my calendar, because it's really important for me to have that body-mind balance. So,
do you find socializing if it's important for science or to the at least your career?
Social networking, socializing. So you won't say that, but I'm actually an introvert. So I love, as you saw today, I love spending time with people and. I like students a lot, I like discussing with colleagues, but I also find it extremely tiring. So I think everyone has to find what works for them. Mm-hmm. And a right balance based on what works for you. I think, you need to do excellent science. That's the first thing. Okay, you need to go to some conference, but never socialize or networking because you must do it. I think, you should feel it. Mm-hmm. And you will feel it if you are interested in science. And having small talks, I don't think it really helps. But if you have a deep, interesting conversation, I think that's nice. I mean, it enriches us. Then everyone has to do it in the way that is everyone is comfortable with.
Actually, between I decided to change the topic to the scientist's life. That's why I didn't continue the female topic.
Ah, all right. Well, it doesn't matter. Yeah. You can...
Yeah, but it's also very interesting because we always interview like about science, and actually so many students and the scientists are also interested in how other group leader manage their life.
Ah, yes, 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 it's true. But my group also knows about my sport addiction. So so they know about, they can, they have access to my calendar, so they know what I'm doing.
They have access to your calendar?
Yeah, of course, so they can see where I am. I share a lot. So that's why I yeah, as I said, I believe in open communication. So if they wish, they have access to my calendar and they can see what I'm doing. And maybe they can ask for meetings as they see free spot. Yeah. Also because I have a life in between. So actually my laboratories are in Sion, which is a satellite campus of EPFL.
Yeah.
And so I'm in Sion generally 3 days per week. And then 2 days I'm in Lausanne. So I like them to know where I am and what I'm doing. So they know I like more conversation and personal meetings instead of emails. So maybe if they know that the day after I'm going to be there, they can just walk in my office and ask me questions instead of sending me any emails. So I like that more. So
I think after this interview, there will be many students applying for the position in your group.
Let's see.
Last but not least, I know I would like always to ask this question when I met scientists. The question is, what do you think about the meaning of life for yourself?
The meaning of life?
Yeah, just for yourself, not for like everyone.
Ooh, such a difficult question.
Also
for myself?
Yes.
What is the meaning of life? I guess it's the... so they say that there is this... you will be happy. I mean, the meaning of life is that you have to be happy. And you have to be happy. And if you are able... And I think I am in that place. Because I do a job that I love. And job is is an important part of my life. And but not in a sense that is what I think I'm good at. It gives me a sense of purpose also. But if I had to stop my current job as meaning of life for yourself, I think is learning, is to keep learning new things. So whether that's for my job or is about learning more about training and learning more about nutrition and learning, I think makes me happy to learn. So as long as I learn, that gives meaning to my life. I will say this.
I like this answer.
But you made me think about it, actually. I never thought about it before. But now that I was putting things together, I think that's is learning.
Yeah.
No matter what I learn about, is learning.
Yeah. Actually, it's the first time I heard this question. I think I asked like more than 50 people so far.
And what did they say?
I think Ben List, Nobel Prize, he said being happy.
Well, but being happy, but what makes you happy? I agree.
Yeah.
Make me, but what makes me happy is learning.
Learning, yeah. Yeah.
So this is, I think, of course, is being happy is important. But then each of us has something that makes you happy. Yes. And sometimes it's having, okay, loved one close by, and this can be part. But I think what satisfies me and keeps me going is learning, independently on, if it's learning for work or learning for, I don't know, as I said, for learning how to train better or learning how to fix things. I don't know, learning.
Thank you very much. I think we really get a great perspective about scientist life today. That's it. Thank you all so much for listening. If you would like to know more about Professor Hafela Bunsendi, you can check her website or Twitter. Links are in the description below. If you like our podcast, make sure follow us on Twitter, Instagram, and LinkedIn. Thanks again for listening. Pre-intro jungle composed by Gastoa. Any feedback, comments, or suggestions, please reach out to us at offspring.podcasts@phdnet.com.